This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
This is Eric Michaels, and once again, you have tuned into the eHealth Radio Network and the General Health and News channels. Make sure you connect with us on Facebook to receive the latest programming for your convenience simply at eHealth Radio. Today, once again, we are speaking with Dr. Morton Tavel, who has practiced for many years in internal medicine, cardiovascular, located at a large metropolitan hospital caring for patients. He's also held a faculty appointment at Indiana University, which involved regular teaching of trainees in medicine. His research experience has included over 120 publications. He has published a medical book on cardiovascular diseases and has served on editorial boards of four national medical journals. Dr. Tavel is the author of the book, Snake Oil is Alive and Well, The Clash Between Myths and Reality, Reflections of a Physician, which focuses on lots of contemporary health issues. His most recent book, entitled Health Tips, Myths and Tricks, A Physician's Advice, is an extension of the first, but now he focuses more on positive steps that can be incorporated into one's lifestyle to live a healthier and hopefully longer life. Dr. Tavel, certainly great to have you back with us today on eHealth Radio.
Thanks, Eric. It's my pleasure.
So getting right into it, Dr. Tavel, are there advantages of eating breakfast? I'd like to hear your take on that as one who really enjoys a nice breakfast every day.
Well, that's good to hear, and I do too. And I must say large surveys have indicated, unfortunately, that snacking and skipping breakfast are quite common in our society, with about 18% of the populace skipping breakfast and 86% snacking each day between meals. Between 1965 and 1991, breakfast consumption has dropped from 86 to 75%. Certain research studies have suggested that skipping breakfast may carry several adverse consequences, including weight gain, elevated blood cholesterol, high blood pressure, diabetes, and heart disease. A recent large study showed that after being followed for a period of 16 years, men who skipped breakfast had a 27% higher risk of heart disease compared with those who did not. This is really powerful information that supports the idea that just by including breakfast alone in your schedule, you may be reducing your chances of all sorts of diseases. Breakfast is more apt to contain more healthy foods such as fruit and many proteins. Protein also provides more persistent satiation that delays hunger and therefore the desire for mid-morning snacks. Protein is especially helpful for it burns up more energy while being digested, resulting in fewer excess net calories to deal with. Therefore, don't forget to include protein sources in your breakfast such as eggs, yogurt, low-fat milk, cheese, nuts, etc., but minimize the processed meat sources such as bacon, sausage, and the like, for the latter pose in themselves significant threats to health. So in conclusion, you are far better off by regularly eating a good breakfast.
And that's certainly some interesting information there. Now, is there such a thing as a good snack?
In general, most snacks are bad, as we all know. They often add extra pounds and possess empty calories, falling in the so-called junk food category. For many people, snacking between meals may account to up to 25% of their total daily caloric intake, and that's really high. Therefore, if you must snack, choosing wisely what you consume is of utmost importance. So what does constitute a healthy snack? Your best bet is to take small portions of nutrient-packed, unprocessed foods. Each snack should include food groups that possess no more than 100 to 200 calories. A 6-ounce container of low-fat yogurt is a great choice, especially for women, for it contains lots of calcium and limited sugar. One study found that in comparison with chocolate or crackers, women who ate yogurt as an afternoon snack consumed about 100 fewer calories at dinner, mainly because protein creates more longer-lasting satiation. So if you don't like yogurt, an ounce of nuts with fruit eaten daily provides an excellent combination of fat and protein, which in scientific studies has been found to greatly reduce your chances of developing both heart disease and cancer. Other decent choices are a cup of low-sodium vegetable soup or half a sandwich containing lean meat with whole grain bread. If these choices are inconvenient, you might opt for a snack bar, and there are a few out there that can fulfill the same requirements. To do so, they should contain real foods like oats, nuts, raisins, or dried fruit. Specific recommendations are presented on my website, and time doesn't permit me to go into those in detail.
Now, for those that travel a lot, especially, or enjoy eating at restaurants, what are some healthy tips on eating in restaurants, either away or locally?
The average American is eating out approximately 60% of the time, so we all must be aware of the many hidden dangers involved in this activity. By the end of 2014, spending at restaurants exceeded grocery store purchases by a narrow margin, a margin which has been steadily widening since then. As a general rule, restaurant food is very high in calories and sodium, and made even worse by adding a sugary beverage. Moreover, vegetables and fruits are often skimpy on menus. So here are a few tips on enjoying with minimal suffering. First of all, we must be cognizant of calorie intake. Most people underestimate the caloric content of restaurant meals. Studies have demonstrated that the average individual underestimates this number by about 200 to 600 calories. Fortunately for all of us, the actual calorie counts of restaurant dishes will get easier after December 1, 2016, when rules enacted as part of the Affordable Care Act kick in. These rules will mandate calorie counts at all chain restaurants with 20 or more outlets, as well as movie concessions, vending machines, amusement parks, and prepared food sold in supermarkets. One survey has already shown that when supplied with such data prior to dining, the average person consumes nearly 100 fewer calories with each meal. Obviously, to be useful, these choices must be acted upon. But as a rule of thumb, to avoid gaining weight, most of us should try to keep our total daily intake at or below 2,000 calories, depending on body size and daily physical activity. So then the question comes up, should we consider large or small chain restaurants? And contrary to logic, the larger restaurant chains appear to be generally the better choices. One study disclosed that 73% of the meals from independent and small chain restaurants contain more than half the estimated daily content of 2,000 calories. This exceeded the content of meals obtained from the larger chains by an average of about 100 calories, and this disparity is likely to widen after the labeling rules are imposed on the bigger chains. But then the question comes up, what about fast food? Should we consider that? And one bit of good news is the content of unhealthy trans fats has been decreasing in fast food restaurants, but unfortunately the average calories contained in a large cheeseburger with fries and a regular soft drink amounted up to a whopping 1,400 to 1,800 calories, which is really quite large. Sodium levels were also high in these same meals, containing about 60 to 90% of the maximum 2,300 milligrams of daily sodium intake as recommended by the standard guidelines. So in general, fast food is best avoided, but if necessary, select carefully. Salad might be a good choice under these circumstances. So let's consider what are some of the selected or several suggested tactics that we can employ when we eat out. First of all, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and low-fat dairy options are unfortunately usually scarce in most restaurants. For better health, these are the food choices that should be ramped up if possible. Meat such as beef, lamb, and pork should be limited to about 3 ounces, which take up only about a quarter of a typical plate, If more protein is desired, substitute fish and chicken dishes, but broiled or grilled and not fried. Stick with smaller portions. Large portions are difficult to avoid without emptying your plate, so ask that part of your meal be boxed up for takeout right at the beginning to reduce this temptation. Also, consider splitting meals with others for opting for only the appetizers or petite size offerings. Ordering a la carte may also help in reaching this goal. Don't be a member of the so-called Clean Your Plate Society. When you're full, stop. Since sodium levels are usually high in most restaurants, avoid the salt shaker. When possible, choose those dishes that are less apt to contain salt, and when possible, ask the chef to desist from adding salt during preparation. Decline the bread basket before it hits your table. So in conclusion, I would say, when eating out, these simple strategies are not really overly demanding, and if you choose restaurants with some discretion, you can manage to eat healthier in almost all of them.
Certainly some very helpful advice. Today we are with Dr. Morton Towle, the author of his most recent book entitled Health Tips, Myths, and Tricks, A Physician's Advice, here on eHealth Radio's General Health and News Channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Dr. Towle, should any of us consider so-called sports drinks? Those are certainly popular today.
That's a great question, Eric. And as we all know, a typical TV commercial shows an actively exercising and profusely sweating athlete drinking a sports drink such as Gatorade or Powerade to replace lost food fluid in the body. These drinks have been developed to furnish carbohydrates and replace fluid and minerals, especially sodium, that has been lost through perspiration. But let's look at some of the facts. When we exercise and get sweaty, we lose moisture from the body, primarily in the form of water, which in the process of evaporation helps to prevent the body from overheating. Sweat also contains a small amount of sodium or salt, which is lost but not in major amounts. As a result, before the rise of sports drinks, athletes and the rest of us drank plain water when we got sweaty from exercise. To replace fluid loss, the way humans have known for eons, is thirst is our main guide. With regard to most competitive athletes, thirst is a good guide for hydration. In the most extreme cases, athletes may develop muscle cramping, which requires drinking extra water and adding some sodium as well. Unless someone is exercising or competing in a sporting event for longer than about 90 minutes, which is a long time, there is no reason to drink something with excess sugar and minerals. Moreover, excessive salt supplementation during exercise may lead to certain stomach and gastrointestinal problems or cause further impairment of fluid balance that may cause salt-induced cramps. As a result, for most of us who may run a couple miles in the morning or play a few sets of tennis, thirst should be our main guide and water our beverage. One concern with the sports drinks is that they deliver lots of calories. Some contain 150 calories, the equivalent of about 10 teaspoons of sugar, which can be helpful to a distance runner, but the rest of us, especially children, definitely don't need sports drinks. For that runs a risk of adding to the burgeoning rate of obesity, which we all try to diligently to avoid. So in conclusion, it's bad enough that these drinks contain sugar already, but sports drinks also have salt, providing no real benefit in most cases. Their contents include liquefied table sugar, which is high in empty calories. An entire bottle of Gatorade will give you 8 teaspoons of sugar. Imagine a regular person adding all this to their diet because they perceive the sports drink as being healthier than a soft drink. In fact, even if you're an athlete and regularly exercise, I would still not recommend sports drinks at any time other than when you're actually in the middle of a sustained period of exercise. This is the only time where a sugar and salt hit will not necessarily be bad for you. All in all, I would still go for just water and maybe a quick bite-sized snack like fruit or nuts. Bottom line, with rare exceptions, when exercising, let thirst be your guide and drink plain water.
Well, Dr. Tavel, it's always good to have you, and certainly always enjoy having you share your insight and healthy tips. Certainly look forward to having you back with us again. Tell us, where can listeners be in direct contact, get more information about your books, as well as to make the purchase?
Actually, my website is probably the best location, and that's www.mortontavel.com. And also, I can be my publications can be accessed through Amazon.com, and just looking under my name, and the various publications will show up there, and that's a pretty direct and easy way to get the information of the type we're talking about.
Well, once again, we thank you for your time. Happy holidays, and thanks for joining us once again here on eHealth Radio.
Thank you, Eric. It's always my pleasure.
We've been speaking with Dr. Morton Tavel, a physician specialist in internal medicine and cardiovascular diseases. He's also the author of his most recent book entitled Healthy Tips, Myths, and Tricks, a Physician's Advice, in an extension of the first, but now he focuses more on positive steps that can be incorporated into one's lifestyle to live a healthier and hopefully longer life. And once again, for more information and for contact and to pick up his two books, it's Morton Tavel. com. And this has been Eric Michaels, and you've been listening to eHealth Radio and the General Health and News Channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. And we do thank you for listening. And until next time, enjoy.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.